Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here. Tuesday afternoon, final hour for us, brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. Abe Gordon in for Randy all week long. We'll get back into the big story of the day just a couple of minutes from right now. Little Raheem Morris audio from the coach's show last night. Brandon Adams going to join us in 20 minutes, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Talk some Georgia Bulldogs, obviously a huge win for them on Saturday night. That was also Kirby's 100th win as the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. Nice little round number there.
You want the stat or should I?
What stat?
Fastest, right?
Oh, I don't know.
One game faster than Saban and like three games faster than, I forgot who the other one was.
Really?
117 games, I think, to 118, something like that.
He's 117.
Something like that. Now, I think that's a little, I mean, it's not taking away from
Kirby.
Oh, please. Kirby, but.
Detract from Kirby's accomplishment.
I think the
somehow.
Program was in better shape than when Saban took over. Okay. That's all.
Yeah.
He had a 1 year head start.
Okay. Although that first year, you know, like that first year was.
Yeah, but they were coming off like
a lot
like
of the,
nine.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, Saban lost to Louisiana Monroe.
He took over a very talented roster. There's no doubt.
Yeah,
again,
that's all.
They had a true freshman quarterback, and that first year was a little bit some bumps in the road, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, they were in overtime in the national championship in his second season.
Yeah, yeah.
So yes, definitely. But yeah, man, 100 wins, incredibly quickly. We'll get Brandon because obviously it's not the biggest win. It's one of the biggest wins, but it's not the biggest win. The biggest win is the national championship. Second biggest win is probably the second national championship.
It might be the biggest regular season win in like 3-5 years.
It might be the biggest regular season win ever. I don't know. I will get Brandon's perspective on that. My guess is, because that's one of the ones I want to ask him, take all the playoff wins, because there's a handful of playoff wins, take the SEC championship games, take the national championship games, all of the postseason wins that they've had under Kirby, and just use the regular season games. I think my guess is, if I'm predicting, we'll see what he says when we ask him in like 15 minutes. My guess is he'll say that Notre Dame game, the year that they went to the national championship and didn't win it. I think that that's the one that he'll say. But I don't know. I don't know if it is. Maybe it's the Clemson game, the year that they won the national championship to start the season. Maybe it's another one that I'm forgetting, but we'll ask Brandon Adams about that in about 15 minutes, along with other questions. And then we'll get to an AMA to wrap the show up at 1:40. Any question, any topic. Phone lines will be open, 404-726-0929. All you got to do is call us up and ask us anything that you want. And with that, we'll get to the big story of the day. Kick off the 1 o'clock hour. Just leave a little gap there in case you had something on your mind. Bow. Bow!
Bow!
You with me, man? We got one more hour to do.
You know, we joked the other day when we had that mix-up, and Bijan almost passed him by thinking, no way I got this guy, and he did not. So, you know, no matter how many times you see that, he's not responsible for him. But Bijan was thinking the same thing. But, you know, Vita is one of those guys you got a game for. You got a game plan for. You got to get hands on him across the board. You got to make sure he's double-teamed when you can. He's powerful. He's strong. He can play the run. He can play the pass. And we don't need him crawling on us again. You know, he's a very good player that can make a lot of plays, and we got to find a way to limit his effectiveness on the game, no matter what he's doing.
So that's Raheem from last night. Big story of the day, as always, brought to you by QC Kinetics, non-surgical treatment for joint pain.
I was waiting
Bow!
On that. Bow. Yeah, see, I'd been waiting on that, and then you threw me for a little bit.
So,
backed up the bus on me.
Vita Vea did. I did. Sorry about that. Vita Vea, just a monster in the middle for Tampa, as everybody knows. It's funny to watch an NFL game and see individuals that look that much more unique than the other giant freaks that are also out there. Because everyone that's on the field, for the most part, especially from a lineman perspective, are just the biggest guys you would ever actually meet in real life. But then when you see Derrick Henry running the way that he was running last night at that size, or you get a shot of Vita Vea standing next to one of his lineman teammates, it's just like, damn, like to be that much different than those guys that are that much different than everyone else is crazy.
It's never like the wide receiver that takes your breath away. It's, especially athletically, it's the big guys. Like when they do things that much smaller guys should be the only ones that are able to do that, that's the one that's kind of, it almost terrifies me a little bit. Do you remember the first time you ever stood near an offensive lineman? Because growing up, I mean, like a high-level NFL offensive lineman. Growing up, I just thought offensive linemen were kind of fat, out of shape, did their job. Very strong.
Yeah.
And then, like, you see them without the jersey and the pads. I'm like, he's not fat at all. Like, at all. He's just a monster. The first one for me was when I first started covering the Buccaneers almost 20 years ago. It was like Davin Joseph. He's a first-round pick out of Oklahoma. And I stood next to him, I'm like, there's no body fat, man. What's going on here?
Well, it's a funny phenomenon of going to, you know, like a Power 5 school. Because even guys that aren't, you know, that end up being like starting NFL linemen or at whatever position. Like, you might have your anthropology 101 class, and some of the football players are in there. And it's like, dang, these guys are a lot bigger than the guys that were on the high school team. That's for sure. It's like, these guys are freaks. These guys are huge. And then when I was there, they were also terrible. So it's like, these guys are the biggest, fastest, most ridiculous athletes in the state of Washington, and they're 1-11. What a disaster.
Can I provide the flip side to this? At the time, not now, but at the time, Indiana, not exactly a football school.
Sure.
And the starting middle linebacker was in one of my classes, and he's like my size. I'm like, you?
Well, I shouldn't have been.
You just won Big Ten Player of the Week? You? You're 5'9".
All that to say, Vita Vea will be on the field when the Falcons take on the Bucs on Sunday. A few things have changed from the last time that they played, and even from last night. Chris Godwin had just a horrifying injury. The Bucs receiver, who's having a great season, by the way, one of the best seasons he's had. He gets hurt late in that Monday Night Football game last night. Mike Evans gets hurt as well. Looked like it was his hamstring that
he's got an MRI scheduled.
Down.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be able to go. And the Falcons, who had all this positive momentum coming off those three straight wins in division, one of them being against Tampa in overtime, one of the most fun games that I can remember covering for this Falcons team over the last handful of years, went out and crapped the bed against the Seahawks on Sunday, and the momentum has stalled a bit. Now, you add those injuries into the mix that Tampa has. Like, you got to go win this football game, man. Like, you need to win this game against Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're decimated.
You always had the pass rush question for the Atlanta Falcons. You're going to continue to have the pass rush question. But now you add in this other thing of, will they show up? Which team do we get on a weekly basis? And that's not a good question that you want to be asking. Hopefully they can get back on to what we saw in their first three NFC South games, and they can look like they're ready to roll and take it too. The other thing here is what is it really going to take to beat this team? And I know that's not the mindset they can have, but when you talk about like limiting Vita Vea and like, this is not, it should not be a game that you have to win on offense. Like, Baker Mayfield's throwing to Sterling Shepard and Jalen McMillan. This should be a game you can handle from the defensive perspective.
Right.
That, like, you don't need to, you shouldn't need to score 31 to win this one.
Yeah.
You shouldn't. You
shouldn't.
Now, I'll tell you what scares me.
I think they're going to.
No.
I think they're going to need to. And that's
Baker Mayfield's an odd back against the wall type of guy, too, where I can see him having a really good game just because that's what he does sometimes.
Yeah, he does. And, I mean, we saw it, especially in the first half when the Falcons played him on Thursday night a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he gets – I don't know if there's a quarterback in the NFL that's more – streaky feels disrespectful to how well he's playing. But you know what I mean? Like, when he gets on a heater, he's one of the best passers in the league. Baker Mayfield can get hot for a half, and again, you saw it on Thursday.
You just pulled up the fantasy stats. He's the second leading, and I know fantasy's not real, but it's also not, you know, it's not totally irrelevant.
Right, it doesn't mean he's the second best quarterback in the NFL, but
he's producing.
He's compiling stats. Yeah. And again, we don't have to go that far into the past to see what he did against the Falcons the first half of that Thursday night football
game. Mike Evans.
So, yeah, right. A couple of wide-open Mike Evans. Now, Mike Evans is not going to be out there. Mike Evans, just perennially a Falcon destroyer, is not going to be out there. So you don't have to worry about that as much. But again, Kate Otten's not bad. Jalen McMillan's young, but he's not bad. Sterling Shepard's not a bad player. Like, they still have the running backs that are pretty solid and had good games against the Falcons a couple of weeks ago. I can't go into that game and just be like, well, the Falcons defense should be able to limit them to this. Because seen the Falcons defense do that over the last 3 weeks.
I don't think after Sunday's effort, you can ask any part of the team to let another aspect win it. Like, everyone has to show up and look better than they did.
The identity of this Falcons team for me right now starts with Kirk Cousins. When they're playing their best, Kirk Cousins is in rhythm, the pass game is going, and the offense is the backbone. He was okay on Sunday, made some mistakes, sure, right. Didn't get helped by the receivers, but if Kirk Cousins is just okay going forward, not going to win a lot of those games.
I would also
not the,
argue
not the way that the defense is playing.
I would also argue to an extent the defense's identity was not giving up big plays, and that's exactly what they did
in
really bad
plays.
Moments on Sunday.
When Jaxon Smith-Njigba threw that pass, what was going through your mind?
As it was
like,
in the air,
I can't believe he threw that. Like, he just threw a lollipop into triple coverage.
I was very upset at AJ Terrell. Why are we basket catching? Go get the ball, man. Like, their guy high-pointed it. You were in better position at the start of that.
When he let go, I was like, I can't. Is he really throwing this? All right. And then DK just went, yeah, dunk ball. We got it. Three guys. Not good. All right. We'll come back and get to Brandon Adams. We'll ask him that question about regular season wins and where Saturday ranks. Get his thoughts on all kinds of different Georgia-related stuff. The defense playing like that, the Kirby audio that we've since heard, obviously his thoughts on the referees and the decision that they made. Imagine Brandon kept it real cool while that was happening on Saturday night. So Brandon Adams next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. This hour brought to you by the Man Cave Store. Up your Man Cave game this season at mancavestore.com. 20 minutes away from the AMA. Any question, any topic, we'll get the phone lines open and you can ask us anything. But 120 Tuesdays, Brandon Adams joins the show, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. And BA, I got to imagine that was a very fun viewing experience for you on Saturday night. With moments of like just fury in the middle, like when that was happening with the refs and all the garbage on the field and all that stuff, I would have paid money to see your reaction.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, it was probably one of the wildest games that I think I've been a part of, because what you just said, that I think for me and a lot of the Georgia fans, it's this simultaneous feeling of true euphoria because you're beating the number one team in the country on the road, and yet also total, you know, enraged anger because of what the officials did, you know, in terms of, as Kirby says, they tried to steal it from us. You know, you had both those things kind of going on at the same time. It created quite a potent, I guess, mix for Georgia fans. Really one of the wildest sort of emotional roller coasters I think I've probably ever been on.
I want to ask you about that Kirby statement. Everyone's heard it by now, I'm sure. There was a lot of great stuff in it, but one part was when he said that they tried to rob it from us. They tried to take it from us. What did you make of him saying that on the field right after the game?
So to me, it was a very human moment from Kirby, because I feel like when I do my show, and you know, Andy, I don't know if you're the same way or not, but I have to have like a little certain filter that I speak through, because if I'm not careful, you know, I don't like everybody and I don't like everything, and I might just come on one day and just start telling the truth about everything that I feel, and in a way that might, you know, get me in some trouble. Well, you know, we use a filter to make sure that we kind of don't take it too far with certain things. But if you just got through playing a football game, in this case, Kirby coaching one, that filter doesn't work quite the same way. And so if you listen to Kirby in this post-game interview right after the game is over with, and compare that to the press conference, which is like 20 minutes later, there's a little bit more of a cool down, a little bit more relaxed. Like what Kirby says on the field with the, you know, sideline reporter is a lot closer, I think, his actual feelings than maybe what he says when he has time to kind of turn the filter back on. And so I think if you're a Georgia fan, the thing that you like about this entire ordeal is Kirby Smart, your athletic director, Josh Brooks, there was a pretty strong defense of Georgia in this, in that the officials totally, you know, broke protocol, did not administer the game properly. It was essentially anarchy. And this was a time in which I think it was not just okay to lose your cool, I think it was appropriate to lose your cool. And in that moment immediately after the game, Kirby just kind of let it rip. So if you're a Georgia fan, I think you love it.
B.A., thought one of the keys heading into this game was Carson Beck had to be cleaner throughout the game than Quinn Ewers. And I don't necessarily Quinn Ewers wasn't very clean, but I wouldn't say Carson Beck was either. Three interceptions. I know it wasn't all on him. Is this just part of the process with the Georgia offense? Is there a way you can maybe get this thing to run without the turnovers?
Yeah, at this point, I don't know. I've certainly tried to sell it on the idea of it's a process growing in the right direction, and now I'm just not quite so sure. Here's what I'll say is, and I kind of joked about this a little bit on Monday, this is the version of Georgia that everybody who's not a Georgia fan hates, because Georgia played pretty sloppy offensively. You know, Kirby even joked about how many drops there were. There may have been 8 or 9. There were definitely 3 interceptions. Carson didn't throw a touchdown. That's a pretty, overall, just bad day offensively. Yeah. And yet Georgia won by 15 points at Texas. Like, that's a really obnoxious level of success when your offense misfired as badly as Georgia's did on Saturday, which leads you to believe if they ever could put it together for a complete game, then my goodness, what does that add up to, right? I mean, you know, there's a chance that Georgia's got an A-level performance that no one has a chance to match, but we're also however many games into this thing now, and maybe that just never quite shows up. So I think we're still as unknown as ever in terms of what Georgia's actually going to be. Will they ever find the gear offensively while also playing well defensively? Perhaps they won't. But if they do, man, oh, man, whoever they're playing that day is going to be in some real trouble.
Do you think there's any chance of sort of altering the game plan or what they thought was possible with Carson Beck, given the way that it's gone through this point of the season? Like, all right, we thought we could run these plays. We thought the offense could look like this. I don't know that we can. Maybe we downshift and go this way. Because, like, an A-level performance would be insane. I think you'd take, like, a C-level performance, yeah. C-plus level performance from Carson Beck right now, given what some of these big game games have looked like from him. So I just wonder if it seems pretty clear that everyone was mistaken about what type of quarterback he was. Do you have to change the way that you call games now with him?
Well, so I don't know that I 100% agree with that from the standpoint that it's not like that people who are making their opinions about Carson were basing it on, like, potential alone. Beck played last year better than he played this year.
Yep.
And now you can say, well, Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers. But the truth is Ladd McConkey was hurt almost all of last year, and Brock Bowers was certainly hurt for a portion of last year. So, I mean, I think that Beck still has better play in him than he's shown this season. I can't fully explain why it hasn't been more consistently, you know, better, but I do believe, based on a proof of concept from a year ago, that Beck's got better play in him. And, you know, you can snicker at this if you want to. I also think that Beck throwing the ball is probably still better for Georgia than the old school keep chopping mentality of Kirby Smart when it comes to the running game. I mean, I think it's pretty telling on Saturday that when Georgia had some early success with the running game, that didn't create more rushing plays throughout the game. I think that's probably a little bit of a tell. They don't completely trust their ability to open up those holes and create consistent kind of gashing plays in the running game. And by the way, the fact they did not get the 4th and short at the end of the game that would have ended the game, that's probably evidence that supports their point that I don't think they have full confidence in the running game. So for as spotty at times as Beck and the receiver play has been, that is probably still their bread and butter offensively. I mean, I want to say, I may have the specific percentage off, but I think directionally correct. I want to say they're throwing it like 60-something percent of the time this year. That is a wild imbalance compared to what Georgia typically would be. And the fact that's coming with some Beck struggles, or at least the perception of some Beck struggles, makes that even more alarming. But I just think that speaks to they do believe, for as spotty as it's been, that's still their best option offensively.
Brandon Adams with Dog Nation, host of Dog Nation Daily, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. B.A., we always thought the potential was there on the defensive side of the ball. Now we've seen it. So kind of a two-part question. What did Georgia do to unlock it, and how do they continue to showcase that level of defensive performance consistently every game moving forward?
Well, to me, it's two things. Thing number one is, and this hasn't gotten as much attention, but you had 3 guys that played the lion's share of the snaps in, like, regular running down situations. Christian Miller and Warren Brinson and Azeer Stackhouse. Mm-hmm. And Georgia really shut down the run in this game in a way they have not been doing for probably the last 2 years. Now, some of that's because Texas isn't great running the ball right now, but still, Georgia gets a lot of credit for that. But even better, man, I think that a lot of Georgia fans have been waiting for a while to see the edge rush play. This is the spot where you probably have some of your better overall recruits, but also maybe some of your most unrealized potential. But Mikael Williams looked healthier on Saturday. Jalen Walker, who's kind of a hybrid, a little bit of an inside and outside guy, I mean, he looks like probably the most draftable player on the Georgia roster at the moment and probably the highest drafted player, you know, for this upcoming spring. And then in addition to that, you know, Damon Wilson, a former five-star, he may have played some of his best football ever. So some of this was a position group for Georgia that is among the most valuable positions in football overall, but at times has kind of under-indexed its performance. Well, Saturday that was not the case. Jalen Walker had basically a historic day. Mikael Williams was certainly taking strides towards being what he can be, and Damon Wilson is solidly in the mix too. Good day for Georgia coming off the edge, and that made it really tough on Texas.
B.A., I don't know if you've given this any thought thus far. There's just been so much like good actual football stuff to talk about, but I think it's an interesting topic. 100th win for Kirby on Saturday night in his tenure at UGA. Obviously, you take out the championship wins, the playoff wins, the SEC championship. Just talking about regular season wins, where would you put what happened on Saturday night in terms of ranking them?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think it's a fun topic. I would have it number two. To me, the biggest regular season win in the Kirby Smart era was beating Clemson in 2021. Okay. As a Clemson team that had been in six straight playoffs and had won two national championships, that was a real underdog spot for Georgia where they had to raise their level to be as good as Clemson had been, and they were able to do that day. I'd put this number two just ahead of Tennessee in 2022 because I do think this Texas team is probably better on par than on both sides of the ball than Tennessee was then. But for me, it'd be that order. Clemson in 21, I believe it's the best regular season win for Kirby. I think this is second. I think the Tennessee win we all remember from a couple of years ago in Athens is probably third.
B.A., you head into an off week now. You've got the cocktail party against Florida on the other side. If there was something you feel Kirby Smart is going to take this extra time and focus on with his team, what do you think that might be?
Well, I do think they got to try to figure out how to get these receivers to catch the ball better. I don't know how much you do that during the season, but you got to try to figure out some way to be a little bit more reliable. And I think that Kirby kind of tipped his hand Saturday night, too, when it comes to the back end of the defense. For as good of a day as it was for Georgia defensively, only giving up 15 points, he said that, hey, we still got to finish plays better on the back end. Hard to know exactly what he was referencing there, but obviously, you know, you had a couple of, you know, big completions for Texas in the game, I guess. And so that's still a sticking point for Georgia, too, where I think they want to be a little bit more sure in the secondary. And perhaps some of that's young players like Ellis Robinson continuing to be on the rise or whatever it is. But I think that's probably the two things right now. Got to be a little bit more sure-handed when you try to catch the ball. And I think he still wants to see a secondary play a little bit more soundly to go along with what was seemingly a very good day for the front seven.
We had this conversation in the noon hour just about like trust meter with all of the coaches in college football. Kirby's one, obviously, no question, take him out of it. But just think about the other coaches in the SEC. Like, if you're talking about a game that you need that team to win, who's the coach in the SEC non-Kirby that you trust the most?
Well, I'll tell you who's kind of coming to their own a little bit right now. And, you know, if I thought about this longer, I may give you a better answer. But I do think it's interesting how little attention Brian Kelly gets because of, you know, they lose week one seemingly every year, right? And so they're kind of off the radar after that. I don't think that people really like Kelly. But he made a pretty big statement, I think, after an emotional win at Ole Miss, I should say at home against Ole Miss 2 weeks ago, going on the road this past weekend. And they handled Arkansas pretty easily.
Yep.
He's probably got the best quarterback in the SEC in Garrett Nussmeier. And they're just playing better defensively than they, you know, maybe have in a good while. Obviously, they brought over Blake Baker from Missouri. I think pretty quietly a guy like Brian Kelly is performing week to week pretty well from a coaching standpoint. And I don't quite know that people have fully recognized that yet. So I think to a degree, LSU is going to be a force to be reckoned with. And I guess if I could add another one here, it's obvious that Mike Elko is a tremendous upgrade from Jim Harbaugh from a coaching – or not Harbaugh, but Jimbo Fisher from a coaching standpoint, obvious coaching upgrade. And it could get pretty interesting for the Aggies. They also have a fairly favorable schedule as you start thinking about a major showdown with Texas near the end of the year.
Well, I was going to say, what do you know? Those two coaches play each other on Saturday night on ABC, LSU, and Texas A&M. Should be a really fun one. Hey, enjoy the off Saturday, I would say, from an emotional standpoint, certainly earned it last Saturday. We appreciate it, B.A.
I've never been happier to have Georgia not playing a game than this upcoming Saturday. I think we all probably needed after this past weekend, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, just take a breath, and then it's a cocktail party. Brandon Adams, host of the Dog Nation Daily podcast. Follow him on Twitter, at Dog Nation Daily as well. And yeah, I mean, it's always, I don't know, I always hate during seasons when my team has a bye week because you like watching them play, except when they suck or if they win a really big game like Georgia just did. A really nice time to have a week off. Conversely, Washington didn't play last week, and that was great. It was great to not have to watch them not run the ball when they have a really good running back. We'll be right back to it on Saturday, though, in Bloomington. Can't wait to see Jonah Coleman get 11 carries and average 9 yards per.
Well, look, the game will be out of hand. You have to start throwing the ball. Indiana's got 45 points on the board.
If Washington goes down by 7, that's how they feel. We're down 7, got to throw it. Must pass situations. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to an AMA. Any question, any topic? The phone lines are wide open. Load them up. Ask us anything. 404-726-0929. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.